One of the interesting aspects of my life as a priest is sitting in the box at the back of the church on a Saturday, and you get to hear all kinds of interesting details of people's lives over the course of that. You know, and in the time that I've been a priest, I've heard now thousands of confessions. And one of the really sad things that I've sometimes heard is people who say, "Well, Father, I'm not really quite sure what I've done. You know, I haven't murdered anybody. I haven't committed adultery." And they'll begin to kind of go through a list of all the things that they haven't done. And I'm like, "Well, what are the things that you have done? What are the other elements?" And I think when we kind of think about sin or kind of look at our lives, we kind of imagine that there's sort of like a bell curve of experience. You know, on one side, you have the really holy saints and the people that really inspire us, you know, the Mother Teresa's of this world. And then on the other end of the scale, you can insert the terrorists or the mass murderers or the serial killers or all those people that are caught up in sexual abuse or trafficking of children. We don't think that we're on either end of that scale, and we kind of imagine, well, we're somewhere here in this great bell curve in the middle. We're somewhere here in that experience. You know, we're probably a little bit better than most of our neighbors, and we're probably a little bit better than some of the other people that we know. But we kind of imagine that we're somewhere just there in this great mass of humanity and caught up in this experience of what we have done. But the problem with that understanding is that we haven't really pondered the gospel today. Because Jesus, in this central part of the Sermon on the Mount, is inviting us to reflect on the reality of our lives, to invite us to what is the situation where we actually are today. You've heard that it was said, and what is he quoting from? He's quoting from one of the 613 mitzvah, the commandments that we find when we carefully read through the first five books of the Old Testament, the books of the Torah, the books of the Pentateuch. And when you read through those books, you see this constant repetition of what Israel is being invited into, this life of integrity, this life of freedom. And you shall not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not bear false witness. Those are some of the commandments that we hear when Moses gathers the whole of the community, the whole of the assembly together before the very glory and the presence of God on Mount Sinai. But Jesus takes us so much deeper today. You've heard that it was said, "You shall not kill." But I say to you, and it's one of these six statements that Jesus says in this part of the Sermon on the Mount. Four of them we hear today. We'll hear the final two next Sunday. You've heard that it was said, "You shall not kill," but I say to you, even if you have anger against a sister or a brother, you have broken this commandment. He takes this, what could be seen as a very strict and a simple commandment, something that hopefully most of us haven't ever been guilty from, and he then brings the bar down lower. He says, look, it's not about just that actual taking of another person's life. It's about the conviction of our heart. To what extent have we actually harbored that resentment towards someone else? When someone cuts us off in traffic, or there's some kind of property dispute in our neighborhood, or there's some kind of situation. And we can imagine, you know, 1,000 different situations every day, possibilities of this having an anger in our hearts for someone else. And Jesus is saying, well, that's when you've broken this commandment. You've heard how it was said, "Do not commit adultery." But I say to you, even if you have lust in your heart, even to the extent that you simply objectify someone else. And one of the awful parts of our society at the moment is the pornification of our world. That we've separated all of that experience of simply being in the presence of another, and we've taken their body parts and said, these are the things that you shall lust over. These are the things that you shall get your experience and excitement about. And the Lord is saying, look, it's not simply about that moment when you get into bed with someone who isn't your covenant partner. It's all of those attitudes of our hearts that have happened long before that day, long before that moment when betrayal has happened. It's in that experience when we've turned our hearts by that slow but insidious desire to look at other things and to be titillated by those experiences. It's an awful blight, and again, it's a regular occurrence in confession of both men and women acknowledging that inability to not click on that website, to not turn on that TV program late at night, and to see those things that we know are going to degrade other people. We know that they're going to tear apart the very essence of our integrity. And it's calling us to that realization that over these things, we have very little power. Over these things, we continue to be barraged by all of those images that degrade and call us away from that essence of being in that covenant friendship with other people, being part of a community that honors the human person, being part of a community that says yes to when we need to say our yes, that we're not caught up in other experiences and other realities. Today, the invitation is to this reflection. This gospel is going to challenge the socks off us because we all fall short. This is the reality of the heart and the ministry of Jesus. He convicts us of our sins. He tells us that you are sinners and you need this mercy of the Lord. But then, and immediately, he offers this untold mercy to us. He provides this way out of this dilemma. He offers us this possibility of experiencing freedom from our sin, inviting us to that truth that no matter what we've done, no matter where we've been, no matter how many times we've broken those covenant commitments that we've made to the Lord, grace and mercy are always greater. Grace and mercy are always available to us. Grace and mercy are always freely offered to us. Because no matter how great we believe and understand and realize our sin to be, the kindness and the mercy of our God is always so much greater, so much more wonderful, so much more precious and more personal. Jesus has done that work for us of taking away our sins. When he opened his arms on the cross, he freed us from every infliction, everything that would prevent us from living the free and perfect life that we were invited into. He's done the work. All that we need to do is acknowledge our sin, to confess our crimes, and to bring that space, to make that space, so that the God of mercy is able to speak into us, to speak into our hearts, the freedom that only God can offer. Let's indeed be people that receive that mercy, that acknowledge our failures, yes, but allow the space and the room for the mercy and the healing of the Lord to bring us to freedom and to allow us to live in integrity today.